This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Joy 94.9.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Have your say. 1300 Joy 949.
Gay
News Week.
Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
A very good evening to you and welcome to Gay News Week on Joy 94.9. Tonight you are joined by
Katie Larson,
Jeffrey Devine,
and myself, Matt Thompson.
Here at Gay News Week, we aim to cover topics that have been in the news over the past week and how they impact you, us, and our community.
And tonight we're going to be covering a whole raft of topics. We're going to be talking about Youth Homelessness Matters Day. We're going to be talking about some trans films that have been made to raise trans awareness, which we're in favour of here at Gay News Week. We're going to do our national affairs and international affairs roundup, and we're going to be chatting about a whole heap of other stuff along the way. And if at any time you want to get in touch with us, this is how you would do so.
You're listening to the Gay Newsweek podcast with
Katie,
Jeffrey and Matt. Get in touch. Email gaynewsweek at joy.org.au or check out joy.org.au/gaynewsweek for all of the links to our social media pages.
Margaret Thatcher has passed away at the age of 87 after some debilitating degenerative age-related conditions.
She got old.
Yeah. Now, this is the story that's been all over the news. She's passed away. Now, what is her legacy and what does that mean for our community?
It actually has quite a direct relation to our community because, of course, during her leadership, the first thing she did was make steps towards decriminalising homosexuality. She was the one in Britain that did that. There's always those leaders around the world that have that as their legacy, and Margaret was one of them.
And that was in her earlier days, yes, before she became Prime Minister, as I understand it.
And everything went a bit downhill.
Yes. Yeah, it wasn't a way of behaving that carried on later. What happened after that, Matt?
After that, when she during her reign, she was responsible for introducing what was called the Section 28 legislation, where basically that meant that it was a ban on promoting homosexuality through materials in schools. It was something that's throughout the years has kind of obviously led off and gone away, but at the same time, it was something that was very oppressing at the time.
So essentially, you weren't allowed to promote positively any aspect of homosexual life to children in presumably public schools.
Exactly.
And not only that, if you know, she's also the one that brought down the unions, dismantled social welfare, and was also very much known for the role of Britain in the 1902 war with Argentina and the Falkland Islands. It's been an interesting one the last couple of days because I think. You know, certainly in Australia, in terms of the media coverage I've been looking at, I think there's almost an element of nostalgia that is being used to talk about this when actually we're talking about someone who was a pretty divisive leader and also, without it being particularly sophisticated, didn't do a lot of amazing things from a social justice perspective.
She certainly did not. And I think we need to recognise who she was and what she did in that context and not to romanticise the past. Mm. And I think we do that a little bit because we are so far away and most of the people that live here in Australia didn't live through her reforms and through her period of government. And I think the harshness of that from a social perspective was probably without parallel since probably the World War II, really.
Absolutely, and it's certainly been played out in the UK. I've heard a bit of the ding-dongs going on the internet and also celebrations of her passing, which is probably the other extreme as well.
That said, there's a lot of people that they've had just in the snippets on the news broadcasts that have been very critical of her. So some of that alternate message has been getting out.
Yep.
Something interesting to note also in the UK is Britain's Queen Elizabeth will actually lead mourners at the funeral of Margaret Thatcher. It's the first time the monarch will attend the ceremony of one of her former prime ministers since Winston Churchill in 1965.
Remembering this queen's been around a while and she's seen quite a few prime ministers.
Yeah, exactly. All right, you're on Gay News Week. We'll have more in a moment.
Listen at work, on the treadmill, or even on the toilet. The new Joy app on your iPhone. Joy 94.9.
Yes, it's Gay News Week this evening with Matt, Jeffrey and Katie.
Yes, indeed. And it's Youth Homelessness Matters Day today.
That's right. And tonight, 26,000 Australians under the age of 25 don't have a place to call home. As you said, Katie, today is Youth Homelessness Matters Day. And in the studio this evening, we're joined by Ben from the Council to Homeless Persons. Ben, welcome to Gay News Week.
Great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me in the studio.
Now, Ben, first off, tell us, what is Youth Homelessness Matters Day?
Yeah, well, tonight marks the Youth Homeless Matters Day campaign, and it's asking every Australian in the population to go without their bed by sleeping at a friend's house, on the couch or in their car, just in solidarity for the thousands of young people without safe, stable accommodation.
So how many people have you actually got taking part in that tonight?
Well, hopefully we're matching the 26,000 out there.
Great.
So hopefully, yeah, we get the 26,000, you know, participating.
Cool. And is it an ongoing campaign? So obviously tonight a lot of people are taking it on board to sleep on a couch or do something different, but over the course of the year it's something that you're trying to advocate for continually?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, part of my job as a PEST member is to really make the community aware of what homelessness is about, and taking that stigma out of, you know, what homelessness is, you know, roughly in a park.
And you just said you're a PEST member.
Yes.
So can you tell us what PEST is?
Yeah, it's a Peer Education Support Program, which is a volunteer program, and it gives people like myself the opportunity to really voice my opinion and to use my experience to help people in this situation.
So why do we need to talk about young people specifically when we talk about homelessness? Sure. Why is it so important?
I think, you know, a lot of young people don't have anywhere to call home. It really comes down to having security, that safe, affordable accommodation, just in general, having a roof over your head that you can call home.
Tell us a little bit about why this is an issue that you're passionate about and what your history is with this.
Yeah, sure. Well, obviously experiencing homelessness myself, you know, being out there on the streets, you know, there's a lot of things going on that, you know, a lot of people in the community don't obviously or see, recognise, you know, which is a really big big part of being homelessness. You face a lot of fears, a lot of discrimination.
Ben, you're 29 years old.
Yep.
You identify as gay.
Yep.
Now, it was a couple of years ago that you found yourself out on the streets.
Yep.
How did that happen?
Well, you know, I come from a well-educated family with, you know, a few careers under my belt, mm-hmm. and it sort of really shows me that, you know, it can happen to anyone. Obviously, sort of having a few drug and alcohol issues, and just really, it can happen to anyone pretty much.
See, that's the link that a lot of people make, is that homelessness only happens to people from low socioeconomic backgrounds, and it's really interesting to note that, as you said, it really can happen to anybody. It's not something that you're destined to happen or anything like that.
Yeah, that's right, Matt. You know, it can happen to anyone from any background, from any ethnic race, with any religious or belief values. You know, it just really shows you that it can turn around and, you know, be present in your everyday life.
I'm reading through some of the background information, and it talks about lack of inclusion and lack of services available for people that identify as GLBTIQ who happen to be homeless. What was your experience of that?
I mean, obviously in Victoria, I found myself that there isn't a lot of gay, lesbian refuges, especially having that safe accommodation for, you know, gay and lesbian community. It's really important. You know, obviously there's a lot of men's shelters and refuges, but personally, I've experienced in a men's shelter of 64 of influx of whoever. And
so when you say 64, that's 64 people or men who are older, or how did you come to be there?
Yeah, it sort of varies. I got referred because being on the streets for a while, you know, I needed somewhere to stay. It was, you know, sleeping rough, you know, eating out of bins, you know, just really things that I wouldn't even consider, you know, being a part of my life, but it happened. And so I think, you know, addressing it and, making a decision to, you know, sort of end my sort of situation, I suppose.
It certainly has been described that discrimination is institutionalised, and a lot of the organisations have really bad policies with regards to homelessness. So it's not just about the fact that you wouldn't necessarily feel safe coming out to the people around you, but it's that the organisations aren't set up for LGBTIQ community members. How did you get through that? How did you manage to negotiate that?
Well, I think, you know, it's really important to be able to identify as, you know, gay or lesbian and be quite proud of that. And I think, you know, having a community around that through, you know, various organisations like the Rooms, NA and AA, you know, that's been a really big part of my recovery thus far and today. You know, just having that, being able to identify with older, younger, in-between gay men that are clean and sober, which has, you know, helped me, you know, greatly.
So that was part of your story, Ben. So you used to live in Perth, and you came over to Melbourne. You came over to Melbourne for work?
Yeah, a bit of opportunity.
Yeah, and then you found yourself here. How long was it before you found that you didn't have a place to live? Was it pretty much...
Pretty much, instant. As soon as the plane landed, it sort of seemed like this impending doom, and everything sort of really started to unravel, and, you know, it became quite apparent to me, you know, that this is sort of my journey. At that point in time.
And you also had some drug and alcohol issues, right?
Yep.
So that would have made it really difficult when you're out on the streets as well.
Definitely. I think, you know, not being able to sort of get the right support with, you know, or surrounding drug and alcohol issues and mental illness, you know, it's vital, I think.
And certainly... as I read through some of the stuff, you know, it's just shocking that the organisations aren't set up. And just to read a couple of quotes, a considerable number of service providers cite peer acceptance, discrimination, homophobia as challenges. Half the service providers were unable to say that they had specific practices and policies around GLBTI youth. And a third of them had no policy statements at all in a sector that's meant to be community-based. I'm just astounded by that.
I think it's one of the really interesting aspects of this. I think a lot of young people, we know the numbers are higher than proportional.
25% of people that are homeless are said to be from the GLBTI community.
From the ones that are actually identifying. Mm. And then we don't even know what the numbers are. I think part of the issue with this is actually that young people don't feel supported. I mean, we're talking about some people who are 15, 16 years old, perhaps
or
even younger.
Yeah,
you know, and they may not feel safe enough to say that's how they identify. They may not even be in a place where that's fully how they identify them.
They might not know yet.
Yeah,
still
this is right. And
young.
It doesn't mean those issues aren't affecting them at home. It doesn't mean they're not being called names. It doesn't mean they're not being bullied. But if they're not able to come out, then I guess it's a defence could be that you can't then provide services without knowing that the issue is there. But I think it's a tenuous defence.
Well, I think that's where it comes in with a lot of consumer participation. Obviously, us, you know, feeding back to services, you know, what can be, you know, better looked at, you know, especially in this sort of area as well.
Mm. Ben, with such large numbers of representation in the GLBTI community when it comes to homelessness. Are there any actual organisations dedicated to actually focusing and helping out people in the GLBTI community when it comes to homelessness?
Well, it's sort of a bit of a grey area, to tell you the truth, Matt. Yeah. You know, just in Victoria, I found myself there wasn't really a lot of GLBIT, you know, services out there for us to, you know, to access, really.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few entry points. One particularly for the listeners out there is Open Doors, an entry supported service, where you can be directed to your appropriate service, and it's a 1-800 number. It's 1-800-825-955, and I really urge to the listeners, you know, if you're going through something like this and you don't know what to do or who to talk to, you know, they're a really great service.
One of the things you were saying to us earlier, Ben, was that in you'd spent about 6 months actually sleeping on the street. So we're not talking couch surfing or a boarding house or short-term accommodation. It was actually on the streets.
Yeah, that's correct.
And in many cases, you found that to be safer and more supportive than to be in a boarding house, per se, or something that you might...
Yeah, for sure, Katie.
And why was that?
I think, you know, being on the streets, you sort of have this sort of code of conduct, I suppose. You know, the community really looks after each other, and we sort of support each other, and you sort of have, you can identify with, you know, the people out there. And yeah, to tell you the truth, I did feel a lot safer sometimes, as opposed to being in a men's shelter with 64 people. You know, you do feel safer under a bridge or in the back of someone's car.
Which is astounding. It just shows that there is really a lack of support there when it comes to those issues. The fact that you would actually prefer to be on the streets and be in kind of these support shelters or within these systems.
Yeah, for sure, Matt. It's unreal sort of feeling, I suppose. suppose it's a feeling of, you know, sense of security. And sometimes, yeah, you do feel safe by yourself under a bridge, to tell you the truth. Mm.
Which can be isolating at times, I can imagine.
So yeah, for sure.
Because you need that support in place to actually feel like a as part of a community. And
yeah, definitely.
It would be an incredibly isolating experience.
Yeah, for sure. You sort of feel like a lone ranger in a lot of ways. You know, it's up to yourself to be accountable at the end of the day, yeah.
And one of the things about mainstream services and housing options is that the homeless community has a large representation of people with drug and alcohol dependencies and issues and withdrawals and mental health issues, and often all of those things at once. And so they're not conducively safe places, a lot of the hostels and support services, because there is a propensity to people that have problems being in them.
I mean, it does make you a lot more vulnerable, definitely being in that sort of situation where you sort of have no control over what is going to happen. You can't really anticipate what's going to happen on a daily basis.
It's a pretty amazing story, Ben, to find yourself on the streets at 27 and to have those 2 years without any supported accommodation. How did you get back on 2 feet and into what you're doing now, which is pretty amazing?
Well, yeah, sure. I'm quite happy to talk about, you know, I've went through two lots of rehab and detox, which I accessed, and that was just a great starting point and a real foundation for my recovery today. It's been a very hard journey, but you know, it's taught me to be really resilient and to access supports when needed now, and just options.
The peer support program that you're a part of is something. The peer support model has been around a bit and been used by particularly the gay community over years, particularly around HIV and bathhouses and sauna culture and all of those sorts of things.
Sure.
What's the idea and the reason that you think it will work in this particular model with homelessness?
Well, I think people like myself having the opportunity to voice an opinion and voice anything really, and really educate the community that it's a big problem and it needs to be addressed, and it's just going to get bigger and better as the years go on, and we really need to home in on you know, services and providing, you know, this service for homeless people.
So what would you like to see change? What is it that you're in PESP to do? What do you want to see happen?
Yeah, to share my experience with some the youth, whether it's you're gay, lesbian, or you know, straight. It doesn't matter who you are. You've got an option to have that freedom at the end of the day, to be safe and to have that accommodation.
It is National Youth Homelessness Matters Day. I think that was right. No, yes.
That's right.
So a lot of people are doing something different tonight, sleeping on a couch, sleeping outside, to raise awareness of issues of homelessness, particularly for young people.
Ben, thank you very much for joining us on Gay News Week.
Great, thank you guys.
Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
It's Gay News Week this evening with Katie, Jeffrey and Matt.
Being true to ourselves is a new project by an organisation called Agenda Agenda. We are joined on the line by Executive Director Peter Hindle, who's going to tell us about this collection of digital stories that have been made by local transgender people in the ACT. Thanks for joining us, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
First off, we just want to get a bit of background on who are Agenda Agenda.
We're an organisation that works with intersex, trans and gender diverse people. We've been operating in the ACT for the last 10 years. I think we're a bit different from some other organisations who kind of work in that space, because we have a fairly broad, inclusive kind of human rights based framework to the work that we do.
Okay. And this new project, Being True to Ourselves, it's a launch of short films that it's made by, so they're all local transgender community members, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So we've been working on this since July last year. We've got a fairly engaged and active community of trans, intersex and gender diverse people in Canberra, which is something we've been working at for many years. So finding participants for the project was actually incredibly easy. So we've got seven people from the Canberra region who have each completely taken carriage, with no prior experience, completely taken carriage of developing every aspect and producing a short 3-minute film. One of the things that we were really proud of was that we didn't really provide participants with much direction. We just said it has to be something about your experience of being trans or gender diverse, and left them to it. And I think the quality of the films that have been produced and the diversity, both in terms of direct content matter, but also a diversity of views about gender and people's relationship to it is really something that's really special.
These stories tell about the courage that it takes to explore who you really are, the determination needed to overcome adversity, and the very human need to belong and be accepted. So there's the seven films, and you gave them the brief, as I understand it, to identify, develop, and produce their own story. So it's a very independent and different way of going about coming up with this collection.
Yeah, I mean, we each person had complete autonomy over their story, but there were components of the project that were also about, you know, community building and building connections between those participants. So it wasn't done completely in isolation, but certainly everyone had absolute autonomy over their story and the images that they created to go with it.
So obviously these stories are going to be very unique in each case. What kind of issues come up through these stories that are being explored through the short films?
Yeah, as I said, there's a really, really big range. So there's one story that is, I guess, a fairly kind of traditional take on, you know, the process of transition. There's another story that where somebody talks about the experiences of violence and discrimination that they've had that have affected them in different ways because of their gender diversity all the way through their lives. Other people talk about, you know, thinking that they found a place to be that feels comfortable and then discovering that maybe it's not quite right, and talk about that process of, you know, really trying to discover who it is that they are and how it is that they want to be in the world.
So stigma and discrimination for particularly the gender diverse communities is fairly well documented, but I don't think well understood, if that makes sense. So we know that it's out there, but it needs to be explored a bit more. How do you see these films working towards that aim?
Look, I think what drives most of the stigma and discrimination that trans and gender diverse people face on a daily basis is the fact that these issues aren't talked about in the public space very often, and when they are spoken about, there's not a lot of real direct knowledge about people's lived experiences. So that kind of fear, stigma and discrimination is driven from stereotypes that aren't actually accurate. So the primary aim of getting these stories out there is that it's a nice way for the broader community to engage with personal stories that are moving and touching, but it's a fairly non-confrontational way for people to just start to explore the issues and start to get a better understanding.
Peter, when we talk about those issues, we talk a lot about, particularly around Melbourne and Sydney. What is the situation of transgender people in Canberra and in the ACT more widely?
In terms of stigma and discrimination?
Yeah.
Look, I think it's fairly constant experience. I think there are certainly differences between cities and regional areas, but I think, you know, my sense around the country is that the experience in all the capital cities is roughly the same, and the experience for people in regional areas, regardless of what state or territory they're in, are significantly worse.
It's interesting to me that a lot of the information that we do get in this particular field of gender diverse people is around a low volume of people. And I think one of the challenges in this space is that we don't have a large population to study. So we come up with seven films, and I read a study the other day on transgender people where there were 15 participants in a survey of several thousand around GLBTI community. Do you think we need wider scale investigation, or do you think this low-level individual stories is what's going to make the difference?
I guess my first point would be, you know, when you operate from a human rights perspective, it actually doesn't matter how many people there are. Mm. If there's one person affected, it's as big an issue as if there's a much larger number. Secondly, I think in terms of that individual connection, in our experience working with people, what we found is that that personal connection, the gift of sharing a personal story, is actually one of the most fundamentally effective ways of changing people's minds and the way that they think about the issues. So,
cool.
Yeah.
All right. So I think this is a great initiative that's going forward. I think the movies or films, what are you calling them? Movies, films, vignettes?
Short films or digital stories, yes.
Okay, digital stories.
Movies is a little bit grand.
Yeah, no. That's what
I like it, after the movies.
Yeah, that's what was coming out while I was thinking about it. It sounded a bit huge.
Peter, obviously this will be launched in Canberra. Is there any way of actually seeing these films from someone from around Australia? Can we see them? Are they going to be online, or how do we go about accessing them?
Yeah, we have produced a DVD, which is going to be launched in Canberra on Friday, but will be available to whoever wants it. We've done that basically at cost, which is $10.
Cool.
We will also be putting them on our website where they can be downloaded free, but that won't be happening probably until about June.
Okay.
And we're working at the moment, it's not confirmed yet, but we're working at the moment with the organisers of the Health Indifference Conference, which is in Melbourne next week from Thursday to Saturday.
Yes,
we're hopeful that we can get a screening at some point around that conference. So,
okay, great. So, Peter Hindle from Agenda, thank you very much for coming on to talk to us about being true to ourselves and the seven mini stories that you're producing. And we're looking forward to being able to watch them here in Melbourne.
Fantastic. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
You're on Gay News Week.
Gay radio, online, all the time, joy.org.au.
You are on Gay News Week. It's Katie, Jeffrey and Matt with you this evening.
Yes, indeed. And now it is time for the National News Roundup.
Yay.
I just made a thing.
Oh, it's good. I like it. Anyway.
First off tonight, we're going to talk about the Logies.
I know. Can you believe it? Here on Gay News Week, we're doing the Logies.
But Brenna Harding of Puberty Blues, which is a show that ran on Channel 10 last year, won Best New Up-and-Coming Actress or something to that effect. We're going to play a grab from the Logies.
We're
first speech.
Right across the details here.
Yes.
Take a listen.
I especially have to thank two women, my beautiful mothers, Vicky and Jackie, who have been so incredibly supportive and so wonderful, not just in the past in the 3 months of shooting, but in all of my 16 years. Thanks so much, Mum.
Now, I don't know if I'm just having a day, but it makes me emotional.
Oh, it's really amazing just to be... It's actually really interesting to see that after all these years that somebody can stand up in front of the Logies on national television and thank their mums.
I think it's awesome.
It is really good.
Get bleeped out or cut there be a controversy about it.
And not to be a political standpoint, but just a 16-year-old standing up and saying thanks to her two mums, which I think is nice.
It was just really casual. It was good.
Yeah,
anyway.
Thanks, mums.
What else is in the national affairs roundup, Katie?
All right. Out of Queensland, there has been further criticism of a survey studying the sexual behaviour of the LGBTI community, basically because they went around to all of one venue over the weekend.
They went to one venue over the weekend to collect their highly representative wide sample of gay people. And having been to the Wickham Hotel in Brisbane, which is the venue, and I know we're not meant to talk about specific venues, but it just adds context because it is a predominantly gay male venue. It's not a very broad venue, and to go on only one night really cheapens the survey. In response to that, some of the people from Queensland Health have said they're going to go to some other venues as well if they can get permission from the venue owners.
All right.
So not a very good statistical method, I would suggest.
We'll just sit tight and wait and see if they can get there, will we?
Well, with all of the funding cuts that have gone on around Queensland Health and HIV and what have you, I'd be surprised if they'll have the money for much.
Mm.
My next story is quite my favourite. It's Kentucky Fried content blocking, which I think is absolutely brilliant. So obviously Kentucky Fried Chicken offers a free Wi-Fi service in their stores, and they're found to be censoring sites which are related to, say, gay
A little
themes.
Bit gay.
Anything that's a little bit gay, censored, not allowed.
Mm. And it's irrespective of what the content is. So a lot of the news sites that are GLBTI sourced have been blocked, whereas the intention of the blocking, according to KFC, was to block inappropriate content for minors, because obviously anyone can go and use their service. So in trying to protect children, they've actually had an unintended consequence.
It's quite concerning as well, because health websites like ACON, which offers a lot of sexual health information for the same-sex attracted and gender-diverse community. That's been blocked as well, and it just comes up with a warning. Access to this website is not allowed.
Mm, you have to look at it out when you're not eating your...
Well, which would probably be best anyway. just saying.
Right.
Anyway, but KFC, in their defence, have said that they're looking at their banned sites list to repair it.
All right. And just quickly, less than uplifting news. The Tasmania's Shadow Minister for Children has said that but even if a same-sex couple happened to be the most loving, caring and involved couple in the world, they still shouldn't be allowed to adopt kids.
Oh, absolutely charming, isn't it?
Everyone needs a dad, was her line, pretty much.
Even though she's
line,
a single mum.
Well, exactly. All right, that is all for the GLBTI National Affairs Roundup. You're on Joy 94.9.
Become a Joy member so we can give you the best shows every day. Call 1-300-JOY-949.
It's now time for the GLBTI International Affairs Roundup this week on Gay News Week. And, of course, we've got Andrew Potts on the line from Gay Star News to bring it to us. Good evening, Andrew.
G'day, Matt.
And first off tonight, Andrew, very good news out of France. The Senate has officially approved gay marriage.
That's correct. So the French Senate has voted 179 to 157 in favour of same-sex marriage. And that should hopefully be the final vote on that bill. A further component of the bill that still has to be approved will allow same-sex adoption. That could be more controversial. And if that part of the law is challenged, there might be a chance for another vote. But it looks like the issue of same-sex marriage itself has been settled. So once that final adoption issue has been decided by the Parliament, that will go then to the French president to sign. And once that's happened, it should go into effect.
Fabulous. Yeah, certainly the vote was 179 to 157. I would have thought France would have a wider margin on this particular issue than that. That actually sounds fairly close to me.
Not necessarily. I mean, there were five senators from the right-wing Union for a Popular Movement across the floor to vote for it. And I mean, I think it comes down to the sort of the margin that the government has there. So it's not an unsurprising vote there.
Okay. And moving through other issues, marriage, what's happened in South Africa?
Okay, so South Africa has hosted its first traditional same-sex Zulu marriage. A couple, Shempo Modisani and Thoba Sithole, both 27, they married in front of 200 guests in a traditional ceremony in KwaZulu-Natal. And they married in the full traditional dress with a traditional ceremony. So traditionally, Zulus have been quite conservative on the issue, so it's good to see a change there.
Andrew, I was going to say, yeah, that seems a pretty significant change because the Zulus are fairly traditional, well, incredibly traditional and incredibly tribal. So was this something of a surprise move? Where did it come from?
I didn't see it coming, that's for sure. I mean, the background of it, I'm not too sure. I know both the men's families are very supporting. And obviously same-sex marriage has been legal in South Africa for some years now.
It has been legal, but they've certainly got a long history of anti-gay violence, and the assault level and murder level in that country of gays and lesbians is still very significant. So it's interesting that we're getting both ends of the spectrum in this country.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting that family is obviously very important thing in traditional African families, and so the couple are saying that they're very keen to have kids with a surrogate.
Certainly. And Andrew, there's a bit of a case of social media coming back to bite a girl in Britain, Britain's first youth crime commissioner. What's happening with her?
Okay, so Paris Brown is a 17-year-old who was hired by the Kent Police Force to become the country's first youth crime commissioner. It was a part-time role that she'd get paid £15,000 a year to do.
Okay. Which is pretty substantial money for
bad.
A 17-year-old.
Sure, yeah, definitely. But unfortunately, after she got the role, she made a series of homophobic and racist tweets saying that everyone on a reality show looked like fags and making comments about illegals who couldn't speak English. And so several politicians, including a Conservative MP, Damien Collins, called for her to be fired.
Sure.
So she's quit the role.
This is staggering to me, Andrew, mainly because, like, how do people not know that what they're putting online will be seen, you know, or not think about that process, particularly taking on a role like that?
Yeah, and I mean, the police have said that, she also denies that she's racist or were homophobic.
Of course.
So she just put those things up
it's
there.
Just of course. Difficult.
Coincidentally, it happened by accident.
Difficult argument.
She put them up with good intentions, of course.
Yeah. And the police said that they expected to be hiring a teenager with, you know, all warts and all, but in respect, it may not have been that.
Pimples and all, perhaps?
Just a few too many.
And interestingly, she is being investigated by the police. I think that's an important part of this story for the things that she's put up. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, you often see stories from the UK that almost make your jaw drop that it's taken seriously. I mean, it's very common to see stories in the British press where it will be, you know, two homophobic sealed gay slurs at a man on a train. Have you seen these boys? Contact police. Mm. I mean, I don't think she's going to be, you know, there's going to be any real serious legal sanction. But hate speech is something that the UK is taking very seriously now.
All right. And in Singapore, there a gay male partnership there basically went to the High Court to try and scrap the law that bans gay male sex.
Yeah, that's right. There have been efforts to try and repeal Singapore's colonial era 377A law, which bans sex. It's almost never enforced. So a gay couple had taken up a challenge to it, and unfortunately the judges decided to not go with them. It's the issue there is when it's been put before judges, they've tended to say, oh, politicians should do it, and politicians just said, oh, well, you know, it's not enforced, so we don't need to do anything about it. The Prime Minister of the country, Lee Hsien Loong, he said that it's always been there and I think we just leave it. And that's despite his own father, Lee Kuan Yew, who was the President of the country, Prime Minister of the country for over 30 years, personally saying that the government should repeal the law and saying that if he had a gay grandchild, he'd be happy to accept them. So it's a bit disappointing there. The gay community are going to challenge that. So hopefully a higher court will have a bit more backbone and do something about that.
It's interesting they say that this is a particularly long-held social norm, so, and change is not widely demanded, so they don't really feel the push to change it. Is that true of Singapore? Is there sort of a lack of, I guess, activism on these issues?
Well, I think that when they say that change is not widely demanded, they're talking about heterosexual Singaporeans, not the gay community there, who have been quite vocal on the issue, and there have been several challenges to it.
I notice also that this is a case that has come out of being charged with having sex in a public toilet. So there is a slightly different skew to it, which I think will take on a level of interest or disdain from the wider community, most likely.
That is possible, yes.
All right, and the story of the week, if you like.
Finish with a bang.
So we're hoping to go somewhere with this. Something's happened in Montana in their state parliament. What's going on there?
Okay, so a Montana state Democrat has taken to social media to say how she had to physically resist punching out one of her Republican colleagues.
We've all felt like that about
comment.
Oh, hey, Katie, something you'd like
no,
to
no,
share?
No, 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 carry on, Andrew.
Sorry, carry on.
I retract.
So what's happened is even though the U.S. Supreme Court has struck down all state bans on gay sex in the U.S., Michigan has homosexuality a technical felony on its books, so no one can actually be prosecuted with it, but it's still sitting there.
What does a technical felony mean?
Buzzword.
It means that it's technically illegal, but no one can actually prosecute you for it.
Right.
Because
the U.S. Government, the U.S. Supreme Court says it's unconstitutional, so the law can't be enforced.
Okay, but it's still there. Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
So basically, one of her colleagues who's openly gay had just given an impassioned speech about how that law makes him feel as a gay Montanan. And then a Republican representative, Creighton Kearns, got up and gave a big speech about how the Bible says homosexuality is immoral and how the Constitution was written for people with a moral character. So Montana State Democrat Amanda Curtis, she said she had to physically stop herself from crossing the parliament floor to punch him out. And then another guy got up and made a similar speech. passage. Now, the final vote on that bill, she expected it to be 98-2 because she thought those two wackos couldn't count on that many people. But in fact, the vote was 60-38. So a lot of Republicans voted against repealing.
And a few extra wackos, as it turns out.
A few extra wackos, and two people went missing in the count. So
yeah, that's right. So there should be a second reading on that bill today, and hopefully that antiquated law will no longer be on the books there, and the Republicans won't have to worry about getting punched out in the parliament.
For the moment.
Yeah, until they say something stupid, something else.
Again, and that's pretty predictable with this particular group of people, but it looks like it's headed in the right direction to get it off the books.
Yep.
All right, Andrew, thank you very much for bringing us all the latest in international affairs. That was Andrew Potts from Gay Star News. You're on Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Listen to us right around the nation. Joy 94.9.
This is Gay News Week with Jeffrey, Katie and Matt.
And I wonder if you out there in Radioland can hear the alarms going off in the background here. We're not actually burning down so far as we know.
No, that's not our building. Ours is much more fun. It goes whoop whoop. That must be a different building. Anyway,
of course it goes whoop whoop. Yeah. It's got joy.
It waves whoop, its whoop. Hand in the air and throws glitter.
There's whistles and screaming.
Why are we talking about fire alarms? We've had a good show tonight. It's been lots of fun, and it's been really interesting to hear from people like Ben talking about Youth Homelessness Day matters. And it actually really brought it to home for someone like me at my age of 18 to actually to hear those stories and think, that could be me one day.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think, you know, you can talk about the stats around homelessness. You can talk about all the issues that affect homelessness, but to have someone in the studio telling their story and hearing how easy it is to happen is it really brings it to home.
Yeah, I can't believe the bravery with doing that and the journey that he's been on to get to where he is as a peer supporter in the field of homelessness. And it is such an issue for our community. 25% of people out there that are homeless are from our community, the GLBTI community, so we should support them as we do.
Yeah, I think. Absolutely.
Certainly. And we thank Ben very much for coming, and we also need to thank a couple of other people.
Yes, indeed. Peter Hindle from Agenda, and of course Andrew Potts, who gave us the international news roundup.
Always good to hear from him. This has been Gay News Week, but unfortunately that's all we've got time for tonight.
Thanks to, of course, our technical producer Matt Nock.
Yes.
And also, if throughout the week you want to suggest topics, email gaynewsweek@joy.org.au, something like that.
I'll take over anywhere. From here.
Go on.
And of course, we're on social media, facebook.com/gaynewsweekjoy949 or Twitter @gaynewsweekjoy.
But until next week, we are
Katie Larson,
Jeffrey Devine,
and myself, Matt Thompson, and this has been Gay News Week.
You've been listening to Gay News Week. Check out joy.org.au/gaynewsweek for all of the links on how you can keep up to date with the team on social media. And be sure to tune in next Wednesday from 7 p.m. right here on Joy 94.9.
Want to know what's going on in our diverse community? Tune in to Joy's range of current affairs programs.
7 p.m. Mondays, Generation Next.
Tuesdays at 7, Salt and Pepper.
7 p.m. Wednesdays, Gay News Week.
And Thursdays from midday, On the Line.
Thursdays at 7 p.m, Rainbow Report.
Then again on Saturdays from 10 to midday, Saturday Magazine.
And across the week, the Community Network News team bring you the Joy 94.9 GLBTIQ News Wrap. A look back at the news of the week in our community.
Yes, we have one of the longest running in-house news services on community radio, bringing you the latest every morning, midday and evening.
Be informed and empowered through your news and current affairs lineup on the gayest station in the nation, Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.